From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in returning Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk gaming and game development.
I'm Ellen Burns-Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Arthur Croy. I, too, make nice games. We are back! And that means just what it means every year. It's time for what we did on our winter break. And so, if everyone is ready, Ellen?
I'm ready.
Stephen?
I'm ready.
Let's start.
Feels good to hear that theme again.
Yeah.
Not gonna lie.
I'm looking at the first bullet point on our notes here. We're back.
Yes.
Good. We just covered that.
All right. That's our show.
I'm back in the cities.
Yeah.
So I moved to Duluth. We talked about that already on the show.
Yeah.
Still old news. But I've been coming back. We've kind of talked about me coming down once a month to do various recording things along with visiting friends and stuff. And we'll see how that shakes out because of other developments that we will talk about later.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I am here now. And I was back a couple weeks ago
mm-hmm.
to I gave you guys very late Christmas presents.
I got a plant.
Of course.
I got a really cool print. It's a very fun depiction of the entire Star Trek II.
Yeah. It's
in
really,
one image.
It's really cool.
Pretty neat idea.
Yeah. So I'm back again this week, primarily for this.
Cool. Well, what's this all about? We're going to talk about what we as a little group, Clubhouse, what we got on up to over this 10-week hiatus. And then we're going to each talk about what we individually did. And some of it might be news to the others.
Yes.
Which will be fun.
Yeah.
But I guess let's start out with why we took a longer break this year.
Yes.
Our hiatuses are 8 or 10 weeks. Mm-hmm. There's no rhyme or reason to it, really.
Yeah.
We did a 10-week one back when we did the Roboston sessions because we wanted 2 extra weeks. And that was the birth of the 10-week hiatus.
Yeah.
This time we did it. Why, folks?
Tired.
Yeah.
Because we wanted to.
Yeah, whatever, y'all. We can do what we want. It's our show.
The Roboston Sessions is that's going to be the name of the documentary.
Yeah. I mean, wherever, I'm just imagining wood paneled walls.
No, it's
whatever that's about.
The Roboston Session was their best album. They were really experimenting with a different sound.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. It's hilarious. We didn't really get up to any specific things. Oftentimes our hiatuses are focused on something, but we didn't really do that this year. Instead, we made sure to focus on connecting with each other. We played games a lot.
Yeah, we got together every week on Discord and just hung out.
Yeah.
And we I think the last couple weeks got eaten up a lot by show business.
Yeah.
But most of the time we were just
chilling.
Let's hang out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we played a bunch of different games. We played tabletop simulator stuff. The crew.
Lots of the crew.
Yeah, the crew is it's sort of the default.
I love that game so much.
It's fun, and it's easy to get into once you know how to play.
Yeah.
Even when you don't know how to play, it's simple rules.
It's hard. It is. I want to say it's challenging. The thing is, sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's just it's very difficult to get the cards right.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's fun to play.
I think among us, I'm the one who likes that game the least.
Mm.
It's still fun,
yeah.
But part of it is because the challenge in it is not really a consequence of your actions.
Yeah,
right.
So, but it's not totally random either. It's this weird kind of.
Yeah.
So you end up kind of. That's why it's a good social game in a sense because no one can ever get mad.
Yeah.
No one ever can regret a mistake.
Yeah.
No one can ever be that proud of a good move.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
It's kind of just it can hum in the background, mm-hmm. even though it takes a lot of your attention.
Yeah.
It's a weird one.
We should play Among Us.
Pass.
Oh, okay, never mind.
I actually like playing Among Us.
Yeah.
But it's hard.
Yeah. No, I can't play Among Us because the UI is too ugly. Just can't do it.
I mean, fair enough.
Right. Yes.
I'm just gonna roll my eyes so hard I won't be paying enough attention to the screen. Then I won't see anything going on.
Thanks for an entertaining game though. For us anyways.
I suppose. I'm happy to be one who loses every time. That'll be all right.
We also played Mario Kart 8 some. It was fun because we played with Max's girlfriend, and she's very good at Mario Kart 8. We got destroyed. so that was exciting. We also played some Jackbox game. There was this Jackbox game that was time related. It was Timeline, and I don't like Timeline.
Yeah, it was fun to see you realize what that game was about.
Yeah.
Because I know you don't.
As soon as I learned it, I was oh, it's a trick. Because I love the trivia games in Jackbox games.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times, mostly because they add enough randomness so no one can really take it that seriously anyways.
Yeah. Right.
Whereas like when you go to like a trivia night, people like get into it.
Way and I'm into like, it.
Who cares, man?
Yeah.
I know this is me saying that competitiveness, but like I don't know. Trivia I don't take seriously.
Well, how do you in the age of Google? It's like
there's that too.
It's a weird flex now.
But this game was about like what year did such and such happen, and I hate those kinds of questions.
And that's the kind of trivia I kind of like a lot because I'm a big like systems person. So, so when I learn about a thing, I'm like, what led to that thing?
Yeah.
And so I love that putting things in order and like, oh, the printing press was before or after. Like, whoa, interesting. And then like contextualizes. It's very up my street.
Yeah. Mm. Not for me, but. But yeah. We also played Robostin. Well, I wasn't there. I think I was sick or something.
Yeah.
But
second mention of Robostin in this episode so far.
Yeah.
It was a game we designed. Was it 2021?
So long ago.
It was a couple years ago.
It was pre-COVID, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it was pre-COVID. And then lockdown happened and we spent a bunch of time on it over
a long time ago.
Yeah. And it is a game we loved. Mm-hmm. And we put together a really nice digital prototype.
Yes.
And then we kind of sat on it.
Yes.
And it was the first thing we did after GLOM.
Yes.
And folks.
No, we did it before GLOM.
Mm-hmm.
I remember this because like we spent a bunch of time on
Robostin. Oh, right. And then GLOM was
And then GLOM happened. We're like, GLOM is the best. I forgot.
That's an even weirder turn of events.
Right?
Speaking of things happening after other things.
Yeah.
So Robostin, I guess because of GLOM sort of taking our attention
and
being the sort of superstar project it became
so
quickly, Robostin was like, okay, fine, maybe we'll get back to that one day.
Yeah.
And that one day has occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that game is fun, y'all.
It is. It's so good.
So I made a physical prototype and we play tested it in person at a couple places.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to try to, I think that's kind of our next big push to try to get it in front of people. Mm-hmm. Dogpile is still in play.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we talked to someone trying to get it published.
We did get an offer.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit. There's no need to get into the details really of it because it's not that interesting.
Mm.
But it was a unique kind of setup.
Yeah.
And we weren't really sure about it. And then ultimately, the person who we were working with like had like. Like a lot of things in their lives changed.
Yeah.
And to the point where there's like, oh, I don't know that I could really put this up. So they kind of. Like, oh, I need to step back from this rather than promise too much. And so, pleased that they were able to recognize that.
Yep.
But at the same time, we were kind of ambivalent about the idea. But then that means Dogpile's back on the market now. Yep. So
if you're looking.
if you're sniffing around.
Yeah.
Where would they get
bark up this tree.
Yeah. I guess our email. But yeah, we have been working on Robostin some the past few weeks.
Yeah, some playtest, little tiny tweaks, mostly in the presentation.
We have a physical copy now. Mm-hmm. We have two copies, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter is, you know, our champion, board game champion.
Yeah,
is bringing the games to the Gamma Expo, both Dogpile and Robostin.
Yep. And so when listeners hear this, Peter will probably be just arriving.
Yes.
To the Gamma Expo. I don't actually know where it is.
I don't either.
That's
the same. Origins is put on by the same folks, but I don't think it's in the same place.
Yeah.
Peter does work with Gamma as an organization,
mm-hmm.
and I think he, bless Peter. He was like, "I'm too busy for this sort of thing. Like, I'm not gonna be your producer anymore." GLOM was great and everything, and like, Peter, you've done so much for us. Don't worry.
I know.
And then he saw his playtest Robostin, and he's like, So yeah, again, bless Peter. We love him,
mm-hmm.
And it's very gratifying that he is busy as he is. He's like, let me see. Give me a copy. I'll take it around.
Yeah.
So we're not professional relationship between us right now. He's just got a copy and he's going to see if he can get in a room. But it's not quite the same as taking it out to pitch because
right.
We can only take so much of Peter's extra time. So I don't know. We'll see what this summer holds. I don't know if we want to do the whole Origins Gen Con thing again. I'll have to revisit that episode where we talk about our board game plans.
Yeah.
Because we were similarly like, it can't monopolize our lives.
Right.
Like, I don't know if we ever really came with a great plan as to how to make it work
without
like spending a lot of energy on it for a couple weeks and then like setting it aside for months and months and months.
Yeah.
It's kind of, maybe that's just our fate.
I don't think there's a good, I mean, this could be its own episode.
Yeah.
I'm sure we've talked about this many times in the past. It's like balancing.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Listeners are probably like, we've heard all this before, folks. We probably have talked about this again and again.
Yeah.
But it's easy to forget and to like go through the same processes again and think about it, because when you're switching modes, you know.
Yeah, and you know, like I think we all have very problem solving, puzzle solving brains.
Yeah.
And so if there isn't like a nice, elegant solution to a thing, we just keep coming back to it and like, what about this?
Yeah.
Well, you tried that. What about this? They tried that. Like, and so just might not be a good solution because it's just really hard to split your time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The tragedy though is like, and more so now than ever, like Roboston is a go. Like that game, that game would do well. Like the feedback we got from Protospiel, which is a weekend of playtesting here in Twin Cities. Protospiel is a category of event. If you have a board game community in your area and there's no Protospiel nearby, you can start one.
Ooh.
And it's kind of this network of events run by local folks.
Cool.
And we went to the one here. There's two in the Twin Cities now.
Very interesting.
Just because we have so much board games here.
Right.
But this is the original Protospiel Minnesota and longstanding event. And we went, play tested a bunch. Like, all the feedback was either like, I don't like this, but this game is finished, right? And other people were like, I love this. This game is finished. Like, the 90% of the comments we got is, this game is finished. I would buy it today.
Yeah.
Or I don't like it enough to buy it. But like, no one was like, this needs a tweak or this rule is weird. And it was kind of shocking because we did all of our playtesting on Tabletop Simulator a long time ago.
Yeah.
And so I think we were skeptical of our own enthusiasm for it.
Yeah.
At the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's also it's a little bit of a more complicated game than that have come out of Nice Games Jams.
True.
And so I think that was part of it was maybe not our brand as much as some of the other ones that we've thought to bring forward.
Mm-hmm.
But and some from not just playtesters, but some industry people who were there, people that whose word I trust were like, yeah, this is ready to go. At least in terms of getting it to a publisher, it needs some balance tweaks. And I think it needs a lot more art, more illustrative art that is outside my style. Because right now it's just all of my graphic designy stuff, which is like great, but that needs to be a layer on top rather than the whole thing as it is right now.
Yeah.
I'm kind of going on about it because like when I think about it, it just takes up my whole mind
mm-hmm.
because like we got to get that game sold. And so you know, thanks to Peter, we have a little bit of a peek into that without. You know, splitting too much of our time,
mm-hmm.
but you know, it might come to where we might want to put some effort into getting that in front of people.
I definitely think we should. I mean, maybe not necessarily have Peter on the show to talk about it, but we should talk to Peter about options for that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
because he would know better than us.
Yeah, he can point us in the right direction.
Mm-hmm,
that's for sure.
Yep. Absolutely. We're also going to GDC.
Hey.
Hey.
Soon.
Last time we did this, because I made the script. Last time we did this, we did not have any plans. Figured out for GDC. So I think we're a little ahead of the curve this time.
Yeah.
We've booked like all of our plane tickets and such.
Yep.
So we're ready to go. When we all went as a group 2 years ago, we spent a lot of time focusing on like PR meetings and stuff because we get a lot of emails because we're press when we go to GDC.
Mm-hmm.
Or we got a press badge, I guess. Mm-hmm. We're not press, quote unquote.
No. We agreed to stop having imposter syndrome about this.
You're right.
We run a mildly popular game dev podcast.
Yes.
It's a very niche topic to begin with.
Yeah.
But yeah, we got the press room. We get the press room bagels. Like our badges look exactly like Polygon's badges.
You're right. Mm-hmm. It's true. Okay. I have to remember that.
Yeah.
Now to just get that Polygon funding.
That's what we need. Last time we focused a lot on, I feel like we focused a lot on like setting up those meetings and stuff. And they weren't necessarily bad meetings, but like they didn't go the way we expected because we're not Polygon, right?
Yeah, like our angle is different. Our audience is different.
Yeah. And so like
we don't necessarily want to, if someone's there to announce a game project,
right?
It's not that interesting to us.
Yeah.
Even if they would be interesting to us.
Yeah.
Sometimes that worked out because then it was like we were a little bit of like the breath of fresh air in the middle of the press junket for some of these folks.
Yeah.
But like, to you know, they're there for, you know, to hype some stuff, and like we're not a good venue for that, so
exactly
we want to be cognizant of that.
Yeah. So we're gonna focus on more events this year because I think those were pretty fruitful.
Yeah.
In the past. So I'm looking forward to that. I got a giant list that Reese, a friend of the show, has sent me, so we can check that out.
Yeah.
We'll do that. You know,
we just got an invite from the IGF if we want to set up any interviews with some of the nominees.
That
would be good for us. We didn't do that last time. I don't know if it's because we didn't have our act together. We probably did have the opportunity.
Mm.
We did talk to some IGF folks on the floor, and that was really fruitful.
Yeah.
So no promises, listener, but let's see if we can set up some of that.
That was my favorite part of 2022.
Yeah.
Was going and playing those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's good times.
Yeah.
Good times. So we get to revisit that again this year.
Yeah. We got a little four bunk bedroom again.
Yeah.
And five of us are going to stay there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Max is going to be.
Dale's coming. We got Dale a press badge this year.
Yeah.
So she can go on to the expo. She can go see some talks. And I'm really curious to see her her perspective on some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then Max is going to stay with us. He goes every year as a, was it conference associate? Is what
mm-hmm. Something like that, yeah.
It's like summer camp, and you help. It's the people in the blue shirts who volunteer and point you in the right direction,
mm-hmm.
who the event could not run without.
Yes.
And who don't get paid anything? I don't know.
They're
exploited by the organization.
They get paid access,
but they have a ton of fun. Yeah. Like, people really love it. Mm-hmm. And that's something Max has been doing for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And so we got Max a press badge. He's like, nah, no need.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm set, thank you. Mm-hmm. But he's going to stay with us.
And
then I guess you and him are going to switch off sleeping on the floor?
I think that's the plan. It sounded like he was very comfortable.
This whole thing is the cheapest any group of people have ever gone to GDC.
It kind of is.
Five people sharing a hotel room, and we didn't have to pay for our tickets.
Yep.
And it's still kind of expensive.
It's ridiculous. but worth it. It'll be fun.
You just got to take more advantage of those press room bagels.
Oh, that's the trick.
Yeah, that's what I did for breakfast every day last year. Press room bagels. Yeah.
Press room bagels.
Uh-huh. Mark, you are going to, how do you pronounce this?
South by Southwest.
That's it.
I'm going to South by Southwest this year, which, listeners, this will come out first couple days of March, and then I'll be on the plane a few days after.
Mm.
I got a press badge for South by Southwest.
Cool.
And we've had the opportunity to apply for ones in previous years. But my South by Southwest, when it started, is back when I was in college radio.
Mm.
So I've always just thought of it as a music festival.
Oh.
And then they started doing film premieres and stuff. And then they started doing some kind of tech startup stuff.
Yeah.
And then they got more games. And I think in 2016, they started leaning into a lot of VR interactive installation stuff.
Okay.
Which is slightly different from other kinds of like VR events you go to. And it's just kind of always still stuck in my mind. It's like, that's not really the thing for us.
Yeah.
This year I'm like, well, you know what? It kind of lines up all right with sort of what my March is going to look like.
Mm.
So maybe I can see if we can get a badge for that. Two interesting things happen. One, we got one.
Sweet.
Which is hilarious. Again, same thing. It feels weird.
Yeah.
Granted, press credentials for something.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I started looking through the catalog. I'm like, okay, I will be honest. A lot of the games stuff is very much like, come see our revolutionary ...
Oh,
and then you look at it and like, this is nothing.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
It's lots of hype. And I'm not afraid to say that. Like, I'm not convinced by a lot of the sort of breathless claims, and it's all very industry adjacent.
Okay.
And so some of it feels like, oh, it's just people using the language of the games industry rather than the actual. So I'm skeptical, but I think I'm curious actually to see some of that for myself.
Yeah.
To either justify or confound my skepticism.
Okay.
I'm interested in that. So from the angle of the show, I'll definitely have notes when I return and maybe I'll record some stuff. Maybe we'll put it on Patreon. I don't know. So I'm going kind of almost as like a fact-finding mission to see if it's something that would be good for us to do in future years.
Sure.
That maybe we could all go to together.
Yeah.
But also, it's South by Southwest. They got music, they got movies, they got everything.
Yeah.
I'm going to have some fun.
Yeah.
And this is the thing I discovered, kind of like, how hilarious, is that Star Trek Discovery's final season is starting this year.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing a premiere of the first episode at South by Southwest this year.
Oh.
So I'm going to that.
Yeah. Of course.
Nice. That lined up well.
That is not, that is press credential fraud. I'm not going to, I'm happy to admit it. Although I will come on this program and talk about it. So, you know, technically, you know, it's their fault. They gave me the badge.
That's true.
So that's exciting.
Is that on a Thursday? Because that's when Star Trek.
No, it's on a Monday.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. So I'm going to fly out on Saturday night, because I had to, because it was kind of late that I applied for this thing.
Right.
I had to like finagle the flights so that I wouldn't spend an extra couple $100.
Oh,
because like this is, I can justify this expense even less than the GDC trip or anything else.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make sure that it was, you know, and this is like going to be just, you know, I don't think I can justify a lot of this on taxes, but maybe we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
But I, with that in mind, I didn't want to spend a lot of money on this trip.
Yeah.
I just was like, well, I'll just go for a couple of days. And I got to get back for, we have a IGGA TC game dev meeting.
Right.
Which is kind of important. We're electing new board members.
Ooh.
So I can't stay through the week So I'm just going to go down for 4 days of the 6 day thing or 7 day. I don't know. I think it's longer than a week, but I'm leaving on Saturday night and come back Wednesday afternoon.
Okay. Cool.
So I'll have like 3 solid days of programming, and in there is the Discovery premiere, but also I'm going to go see the FCC chair do a presentation, which is a thing I've done before. I went to CES years ago when Tom Wheeler announced net neutrality, which was like a big deal at the time. I was really happy
to
be there. Yeah, it's one of the sort of moments in my life like, oh, I'm seeing history. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'll go see another FCC chair. Like,
sweet.
And the current one, she's been doing a lot of really good things. And because the FCC for a while was stalemated 2-2, people can look up the news on this. I'm not sure how much interest it is to everybody, but it's really fascinating. And it was nominating a fifth board member to make it so that you'd have a Democratic majority so you could actually get regulations approved. And also net neutrality, which got taken away in the last administration because it's all regulatory. It's not, it's not a legal framework. And the FCC just gets to decide. I mean, they have a process, you know, but Ajit Pai took it away, and some companies have been testing the waters of abusing it. And so we'll see. And now might be actually a good time to announce it. So wouldn't that be hilarious?
Oh, that'd be interesting. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm a fan of hers, and it would be great to see that.
Catch all the Pokemon, all the FCC.
Yeah. So
directors.
That's, you know, like I like the sort of history stuff of seeing what happens before whatever. Like all this stuff is connected.
Yeah.
We as game developers, like we work in a technology field, like that's that kind of regulation, like media regulation and like corporate ownership of channels and methods and distributions. And all of that stuff is so matters so much to our lives in such a big unseen way.
Yeah.
And so I'm always interested in that. So I'll report back on that too.
Cool.
Okay, so we've been off for 10 weeks.
Yes.
And every one of those weeks, folks heard at the top of the episode, hey, you know what? You could give us some money on Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what do you think? Should we, like, give it a break this week? Or should we, like, ask one more time?
Ask again.
Okay. Ellen, why might folks want to give us some money on Patreon?
Okay, so here's one thing we did do over break is I did a little cost exercise on how much we actually put into the show. It was a lot. So, like, you know, we think about, like, Patreon as, you know, short monthly donations, like, kind of small donations and whatnot. And we sometimes think about the show costing money in terms of what the actual cash costs are.
Mm-hmm.
We never really factor into the show's costs, like, what our time is worth.
Oh, yeah.
And we still won't.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because those numbers are big.
Right. It's too scary to calculate.
Exactly. It's too scary. It's calculated. And then we put that document into the archives and we're forgetting about it.
Yeah.
Except for right now, we're going to bring it out and say, like, okay, listen, we're not asking to be compensated for our time because we really like doing this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, we see it as like a service to the game dev community. And, you know, we have great conversations with you on Discord and the other platforms.
Yeah.
But also, there are some costs that you can't just volunteer away. You know, like we think it's important to help Max and pay him a tiny little bit to help us, you know, with guest booking. And
yeah, poor Max, we underpay him.
We buy a lot, boat or something. And we
wait, no, listener, you underpay him.
Good point. Thank you, Mark. There's like the hosting costs and the website costs,
right?
Yeah,
to other costs.
And you know, we. Every year with Incredulity, we talk about getting free press badges to things.
Yeah.
Like, it still costs us a lot of money to go to these things. And
right.
We are now going as, I mean, the first year we were kind of like timid about it,
mm-hmm.
but now like we go for the show.
Right.
And so we each have to take a personal cost that we also generally don't calculate because it would completely destroy our books.
Yes.
I did calculate it as part of,
Yep. And again, we're not like, these are all things where it's going to continue as it goes.
Yeah.
But I think if you find any value in the program and any value in us, I would say it would take a long way to alleviate all of our concerns.
Yeah.
And so we're not asking for that.
Mm.
We're saying what makes sense to you? What can you spare? What value do you put in it? Because we can't send listeners a bill for our expenses.
Right.
What we can say is that you can invoice yourself for what you think. You get out of the program.
Yeah. So go to patreon.com/nicegamesclub. Check out the options there.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, Ellen, your part of the show begins now.
Is that it? That's all you gasped?
Actually,
that's what you did on the entire winter break.
Mean.
Yes. Honestly.
Oh, no.
No. There have been some crazy things that happened over the last couple months. So Christmas happens over hiatus.
Right.
And we moved to Duluth in November. And then we decided that one great thing to do right after we moved is to volunteer to host Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems reasonable.
Mm. Don't do that.
Yeah.
But we did do that because we were like, okay, no, we need to have a deadline to help us like get a lot of these house things done.
You didn't pick like Valentine's Day and it happens 3 months later? You picked?
Christmas.
Okay, Christmas.
Yeah, Christmas. Yeah. So we had like 11 guests at our house.
Dang.
It was nuts. Everybody fit. Nobody got hurt.
Okay, that's good.
Yep.
I believe you.
I'm just double checking my memory. It was like a whole month and a half ago.
Yeah.
So, we had like everybody from Eric's side of the family over,
mm-hmm.
nephews, the sisters and all that. And we did like a tree and we did all the gifts under the tree. And then the gifts were way more than could actually fit under the tree because there were 11 of us. Right. Well, there were actually 11 of us were visitors. Four more of us were residents. So there was like 14 or 15 people at this house. Crazy. And it was really fun. But it was a lot of work. And so then we kind of just crashed for a few days after that.
Sure, yeah.
And then I got another new job.
Well,
yeah. Yeah, listeners who've been listening to our replays heard a lot about Ellen's last new job, which we talked about on the show whenever that was in over the summer. I don't even remember. Anyway.
So most recent previous job, I was a lead game designer at ELB Learning.
Mm-hmm.
And the company, I think I've mentioned this before, is like is a pretty sizable company and has recently like grown quite a bit because it kind of merged a bunch of other companies together.
Mm. Yeah.
And at first it wasn't really merge. It was mostly just kind of like orbiting.
Yeah.
And now it's merging. Mm. And so there's been a lot of movement and people moving around and different ideas about how things should go. And so one of the things that they've done is we've spun up like a strategy team, mm-hmm. a learning strategy team. So this is like people who've spent a lot of time in the industry and know a lot of stuff. And a group of them, and they just like meet with customers and say, what do you need? And then figure out how that can be done. And that's usually like sometimes gets really complicated. Really complicated. Like some of the things we've been working on over the last couple months have been like, okay, so we need, it needs to be VR simulation, but we'd love to have some kind of game mechanics built in so that it's actually interesting and immersive and engaging, but that we do need the back end too because we need the learning analytics. Like this is complicated stuff. And so I'm managing that team. It's my role now.
Yeah.
So I think the role is VP of Learning Strategy, but like.
You think?
When the business cards comes in, you'll know for sure.
Yeah.
Right. They put the sign on the door.
Yeah.
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 You just don't want to admit that you're an executive now.
Probably. That's probably part of it.
Yeah.
But it's so cool, though. I don't
know. We know an executive.
Yeah, so, right?
You know a few of those already. I'm pretty sure you do know those.
Nuts to those others.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's it was. I have complicated feelings about it. I'm having a lot of fun. The team of people is absolutely fantastic. They're all brilliant, and so I feel like I'm the dumbest person on the team, and that's how it should be. I just like try to be a bulldog and get things out of their way. Mm-hmm. It was hard. I mean, it's kind of hard. Like I worked really a lot to try to get a game design position full time, and then it was like, oh, I'm saying bye to this so quickly.
Yeah.
But the leaders in the company that I've been working with most closely, they sought me out and asked me if I'd be willing to do it. And yeah. So I'm like, okay, if they believe I can do this and I'd be good at it, I should at least give it a try. Mm-hmm. Cause it'll never be easier than it is. It'll never be easier to try out this kind of role as it will be here, even though it's not an easy role and never will be. And it is challenging. You guys saw my calendar. It's like 7 hours of meetings every day.
Yeah.
Because they approached me and just the nature of how it came to be, I thought it was the right move to make right now. See if I do like it.
And also cha-ching.
Yeah, there's a lot more money. But the other thing is like, you know, this company is kind of, again, a merging of many other companies, but there aren't a lot of women in the leadership of the company right now. Yeah. And so like, you gotta take that opportunity to be the change you want to be.
Is that exciting for you, or does that kind of feel like a burden?
Like an obligation?
A responsibility?
It kind of feels like a nothing.
Okay.
It
is that good?
There's a nothing? I think it's good that it's a nothing. Like, yeah. It makes me, it like, okay, yes, this is an important opportunity, and like this is one reason that I said yes.
Yeah.
But also, like, I don't feel like I'm at a disadvantage in this role because of, like, my gender.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't feel like it's going to be more challenging for me, even though maybe in some sort of like universally objective view, it might be. I don't know. I'll never know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, I don't know.
And the responsibility part of that being a reason you took it is outweighed by all the other pressures that caused you to take it. It sounds.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like, it's, I'm trying to think of it this way. Like, I feel, and this is maybe just because of where I am in history, like, I do not feel like if I'm bad at this role, it's some sort of like negative reflection on women in leadership.
Sure, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
it's just me. Mm-hmm. Like, but it is an opportunity for this kind of opportunity, you know, this kind of role to be, you know, for a woman to step into it.
Okay.
Let's take it. But it's not like, that's not a significant pressure.
Got it.
I don't feel pressure because of my gender in this role.
Okay. Well, that's great. I mean, then you got space to celebrate it then.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I think so. I'm sure I'll screw up like in major ways. And
well, you're a vice president, so like that's part of the job description, I think.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
If there's anything I learned from people in corporate jobs complaining.
Right.
It seems to be part of the job.
Okay, yes. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I was working at home.
I didn't mean to scare you.
You didn't. No, it's like I was working at my sister's house because I'm, you know, down in the cities and I live in Duluth. So I'm staying over at my sister's while I'm visiting. And I was working from her place yesterday. She's like, oh, I was kind of listening to you on the call. You sound like a good manager. I'm like, you don't know that. That just means I'm a good talker. Yeah. And I don't know if you knew this, but like I'm on a podcast. I have a lot of practice at that.
Yeah.
So I don't, we'll see.
I hadn't thought of that angle, but like because you're in meetings all day, you are kind of doing a lot of presenting and talking. So
yeah.
Maybe this show has actually.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's I did cool. A webinar yesterday and I was kind of in like this MC role.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Ask big questions.
Nice.
I introduced myself like, I am a Lee learning strategist. We ask big questions to get at the heart of the matter.
Yeah.
And I came in three more times during the webinar and like, ask some big questions. And the other panelists that were on the webinar were like, oh, that's a good question. And I was like, yeah, it was. That's what I do.
Yeah. Well, listeners will know that amongst the three of us, that is your strength.
Mm-hmm.
Is like opening the discussion with questions and like expanding the scope of our discussions while also like directing us to like, that's one of the great things you provide on the program. And so I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
That's a talent you bring to work too.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of like how this role is shaping up now. You know, like, again, I have like the team of people I have is very talented and very experienced.
Like, that's so exciting.
Yeah. That's
great. They're brilliant and they're all nice. It's like, what the heck?
Oh, it's wonderful.
Again, this is like, it's like, it's never going to get easier than this.
Yeah.
If I can try this out and I don't like it now, I will never like it. And that's a good answer to be able to. Like, yeah. How often do you get to be like, I know this for certain about myself?
Yeah.
You know?
Really, yeah.
So that's kind of really the reason why I took it is that, okay, and the money, but like, because like, this is the most positive conditions I could ever get.
Yeah.
And so if I don't like it, then I know for sure it's not for me.
Cool.
Anyway, so that's the biggest thing I did over break. Mm-hmm. And because I have 7 hours of meetings every day, I'm not doing them. It's kind of like 7 hours of meetings and then like 2 hours of other work that can't happen in a meeting, but still needs to happen.
Yeah.
And then collapse. No. And then like go for a walk with the dog, or Eric and I are playing in a couple of music groups up in Duluth. So we're in a little brass choir together. I play the trombone. He plays the euphonium.
I didn't know you played euphonium.
He didn't until he joined this group.
Okay.
So he's had to learn bass clef, and I get to laugh at him.
Cool.
He sounds great.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, I know. He's very dedicated at practicing. And then we also joined, we've just been doing this for 2 weeks, but a community jazz band that just started up.
Ooh, fine.
So I think we're only down like one or two instruments now. The first week I showed up, we didn't have a drummer, and we didn't have a bass player. I only had a couple saxophones.
No low ends. What kind of band is that?
Right, exactly. We did.
Eastern playing jazz.
We had a full trumpet section and three of four trombones.
Okay.
this last practice session, we had almost everybody, including a barry sax, because it's not really a jazz band unless you have a barry sax. Like, you can't play the cool stuff if you don't have a baritone sax.
It's kind of true.
Yeah.
Nodding along over here.
It's like, yeah, sure.
It's not actually true. It sounds cool when you say it.
Just confidence, which you both said it.
You got Monin. We'll link to it.
Oh, Monin.
Right?
Great song.
It's such a great line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. We'll link to that in the show notes because it's a fantastic song. If you have not heard that jazz piece, then you should hear it. And if you don't like jazz, you probably won't like it.
True.
Anyway, when we played like tabletop games. So we've had some people up to visit, and I introduced them to Glom, and that was fun.
Cool.
Hey.
And we played a game. Not really a game. It's called Table Topics.
Oh.
Like this little cube of card, like discussion topics, with like 200 cards or 300 cards per deck.
Okay.
And they have all these questions like in different cubes, and the different cubes are for different contexts and settings. Mm. So we got the family one, and then like did like some conversations with people during the holidays, and it was stuff like, what was your favorite room in your childhood house? And you know, these are like, they're like really low stakes questions.
Yeah.
Well, it's this whole category of icebreaker games that you had us play a couple of on like some Patreon content a long time ago, right?
Yeah.
It seems like you're like scouting for more of that genre.
Yeah. I mean, I think I might get more of these boxes because the questions are really good. Like, describe your favorite room in your childhood home. Everyone has a different, especially if you're in like a large family setting, like everyone has different answers.
Yeah.
And but it reveals so much about like someone's background.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of those questions were like really positive, and even if they revealed things that maybe were associated with some negative emotions, like it did so in a way that made it feel like kind of safe, or it gave you options to like what level to share.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Sure. And so I thought and they were just questions that never come up in casual conversation.
Right.
So I'm gonna be like, Stephen, what was your favorite room in your childhood home? I've never. Yes, now you have to answer.
Do I?
What room, Stephen?
It's either the it's either the attic or the basement. Because my room was in the attic, because that's where my parents put the kids.
They kept you in the attic.
They did.
I also had an attic room.
Yeah. It doesn't explain so much. No. And then when I was a teenager, I spent a lot of time in the basement because that's where the Xbox 360 and stuff was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally makes sense.
You know, it's both things.
Man of extremes.
Yep.
Stephen McGregor.
That's me.
Questions like that are interesting because I think some people will have a ready answer for that.
Yeah.
Like a thing that they've talked about already in other conversations. And some people will have to sit and decide the answer to that question.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which makes it not true explicitly. Like, what was your favorite room growing up? Like, well, I don't know. Let me think about, and it's filtered through now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't make that question any less revealing or interesting.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Right? So like, that's the kind of like, you know, taken in that spirit, like all it is designed to get you to talk.
Yeah.
Right? It's the part of a framework for that.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, you do get to know yourself a little better because these are just, again, questions that rarely come up.
Yeah.
But they're really revealing. And so I thought I bring that up because it's not really a game. You can't win at Table Topics.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, I overshared the most. I guess you could do that. No, like,
there you go.
You could.
I can win.
Okay. Stephen won because he's the only person we asked a question.
Aha! Right.
Plus he had two rooms in his answer. So that's,
wow, yep, see? The most number of rooms.
Double points.
I'm the best.
You can't, unless you're Steven, you can't win at Table Topics.
Is that in the rules?
It doesn't even have rules, right?
I mean, I would recommend everyone just put that clause in there just for safety.
Yeah.
Steven can win, but no one else can.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Just to avoid trouble.
I think it takes a lot of, like, creativity and like a really clear goal for what each deck is to, yeah, write questions that hit exactly that sweet spot.
Sure. Yeah.
And every, yeah, we didn't even get close to pulling all the questions from that deck. I mean, like, that the box is like the size of a softball, maybe size of a baseball, mm-hmm, okay, and it's just chock full of questions.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked for like an hour and a half and got through, you know, a couple, yeah, dozen max.
Yeah.
So like it, you, there's a lot there. And I think it takes, yeah, again, I think it takes a lot of like really clear focus on what you're trying to achieve, like the emotional experience you're trying to achieve, mm-hmm, to write an entire, like, hundreds of questions like that, and then to have multiple decks of hundreds of questions like, yeah, that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
We should have them on the show.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say you could grill us with these questions,
yeah,
in some more Patreon content, but yeah, we should see if we can get the
both
developers
maybe
on. Yeah.
Both maybe. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, and then played a little bit of Project L here and there, which is, I think I've mentioned on the show before, but it's basically like Tetris, the tabletop game.
Mm-hmm.
So you have like little shapes, you organize the shapes, mm, and they are like the Tetris shapes.
Oh, that sounds L. really cool.
Yeah. And
it sounds,
I thought,
better than the Tetris game I had as a kid. It was bad.
Yeah. It's out there. You can buy it. My sister has it and she got it on Kickstarter, so she has like really deluxe plastic pieces.
Yeah.
Ooh, nice.
And I think the versions you can get out on like retailers now are cardboard, but you can also, if you want to spend more money on games.
And who doesn't?
Right? You can go to Etsy and then people have made like sets of acrylic pieces.
Yeah, oh,
that,
yeah,
are also really, really nice. So you can upgrade your deck, your set, your game.
That's so fascinating because Tetris itself was inspired by a similar toy,
hmm,
that had actually, were not tetrominoes, they were five piece things, but similar,
oh, right, yeah,
L-shaped and, you know, stuff like that. That was the inspiration for Tetris originally.
Yeah.
So kind of cool to bring that back to and give it some rules,
yeah,
to make it a game.
Yeah, we'll link it in the show notes. It's really cool and it's got great graphic design. You'd really appreciate it, I think, Mark.
Cool.
And then the last two things I'll mention, one more game, and that is a game called Trial by Trolley.
Uh-huh.
Which is associated with Cyanide and Happiness, the webcomic people.
Yeah. Oh.
And so this is a game centered around the trolley problem.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah. Right. So you like build a little train track and then you like place different people and then you can stack different people and the whole, like, so it's like one of those games where you like have two people competing and the third one's a voter.
Yeah.
And but here the two people are competing of like, no, you shouldn't hit my people. You should run over their people.
Yeah. Because famously, that's what the trolley problem is,
right,
about.
Right, exactly. And so you're like,
is who to kill.
Right, who to kill. So you choose like, okay, this.
Which of your friends to murder?
You get a bunch of cards that have people and like critters, yeah, and things or like whatever. And then you can put them down on the track to make it less likely that the person who controls the switch will go over your track.
Oh.
Right. So it's like all the, you know, kittens. A family of small kittens can be, and then you can like escalate. So the way you lay down your hand of people or cute things,
yeah,
mm-hmm, is dependent on how you expect to be able to manipulate the person who's voting. And I would love to see the McGregor brothers play this game.
Oh boy!
Personally,
you think we'd ever see them again?
they might leave and actually push each other in front of a trolley.
Right, right.
But it'd be funny up until that point.
Yeah.
So
for some of us.
Okay, so that you can, for your next Christmas present, I will either get you a plant or that game.
Great. Looking forward to it.
And then the last thing I'll share is I am on the last chapter of Educating Intuition.
Whoa.
I'm on the last chapter. I'm almost there. Oh my God.
Let's go.
I'm almost there.
Oh, intense. That's okay. Great.
That's me. That's what I did. That's a lot, actually.
Cool, cool. I guess it's me next.
Yes.
So I realized that last year I kind of like cheated and just talked about movies I watched.
Uh-huh.
I did watch a lot of movies that year, I think, but like, I don't know, wasn't like that many more than I watched like this year. I think I just don't remember what I did after 2 weeks. So I had a hard time coming up with stuff. Unless it's like super notable. One notable thing that happened over the break is I got COVID.
Boo.
And there were none.
Yeah. It was the first time I've ever had it. And it was weird because it was like a really mild case.
Yeah.
Like I felt sick for a few days.
You've been vaccinated.
That's kind of what most are now. If you're boosted another.
Yeah, yeah. But I tested positive for like 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And it sucked because I felt fine. And I was like, and it was annoying too because it happened the day after Christmas. So thankfully, I got to do Christmas stuff, but like, and thankfully also I didn't get anybody else sick. But after that, I didn't get to do like, I had planned a whole New Year's thing. And I wasn't able to go because I was sick. And so, like, it was just kind of frustrating because it after a while, it kind of just felt like I was going to test positive for forever. I mean, obviously, that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
But it just, I don't know.
It's just, when I had it, I had it pretty bad.
Yeah.
Just because that was going to happen if I got it. Mm-hmm. But I also would test positive for like 4.5 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
Longer than you, but it was in May. Which that's a month you can afford to lose. But it was similar. It felt just like, you know, and Dale was out of the house and it was just like the worst.
Yeah.
But like over the holiday when you've already made plans, like that compounds that. Like that's worse.
It's just really frustrating.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm better now.
I mean, I'm glad at least it was just boring and not a tribulation.
Yeah. That's true. Like it's frankly, it was a blessing that like I didn't experience it as bad as some people got it. I know some folks in my family who got COVID around the time I did, and it was much worse for them. Yeah. And I don't know that they were fully vaccinated, so that might have been part of the problem.
Sure.
So, like, I am glad that, like, it wasn't that extreme of a thing. But
I'm glad, too.
It did cut into my vacation.
Yeah, for sure.
It was actually, it cut into all of my break. I had 3 weeks off, and, like, all of it was dedicated to COVID. So that wasn't great, but, you know, that's how it is.
Yeah.
I've been doing more design work at Future Club, though.
Yeah.
Recently, which has been really exciting. Turns out I'm good at game design. Did y'all know that?
I suspected.
Oh, okay. Well, I wasn't sure. No, we've been working on this deck building game. I'm starting to like better understand my work process with respect to in general things. I take more naps and it's good for my work.
Yeah.
Because I recognize that like I do a lot of thinking right before I fall asleep because that helps me fall asleep. And like I'll come up with ideas and then I'll wake up and I'll half remember what I came up with. But then I can actually like
the good half though.
Yeah, the good half. And I can actually like formulate the reasoning behind this idea after the fact. So like it's kind of cool because like I definitely feel like I'm getting a better understanding of like how I think and how I can use that to help me in my work. So that's been really great. Future Club in general has been struggling to find funding still. You know, but we're still trying to work at it. Our goal is to have something published by the end of the year. And I think
sign with a publisher.
No, just actually have something out.
Deliver something.
Yes.
Oh wow.
Yeah, we're reducing scope for games and things that we've been wanting to do. So like we really want to have something out because I think, you know, I've been with Future Club for 2.5 years now and we haven't had anything out and a lot of it has just been we've been trying to find publisher funding.
Yeah.
And that just really hasn't happened. I think we're all kind of sick of it. So we want to just if we can get something out the door, or at least get something close. Then maybe we can go to a publisher and say, hey, this game's close. Just help us, you know, market it and stuff.
Mm. Right.
They might feel more willing to do that at that point.
And then if not, then you can do the self-publishing route.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of the plan. We'll see how fruitful it is. You know, it's only February. So we got 10
I was thinking months. Something else. I'm like, it's already February.
Well, is that too, right? Right. We don't have a lot of time to get this game done, but also we don't know what can happen. Yeah. A lot of things will change. We are a bunch of folks at Future Club are planning on going to GDC and actually I might be going to help do some pitching at GDC
cool
for some of these games too, so we'll see if that leads to something. You know, it's a exciting time. I have not normally been involved with the pitching process. I don't know how valuable I'm going to be with respect to pitching these games. I can speak to the programming aspect and the plans that I have for respect to that and if people have questions about that, but from meetings and stuff that I've had with publishers in the past doesn't come up that often unless there's like a programmer there.
Yeah, there's, I think publishers are basically, they just need to know that you can build it and they don't really care how.
Yeah, yeah. They'll be like, can you put this on Switch? And they'll be like, maybe.
They'll want to know what engine it is for that reason, especially with small teams.
Yep. Yeah, they ask if it's in Unity and stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they don't normally ask a lot of the specifics of the questions. Thank goodness, because I don't have everything figured out. You know?
You'd be like, so coroutine.
Yeah. Have you heard the good word? No. The other thing I did is I participated in the Global Game Jam this year.
Woo-hoo.
I haven't done it in like 4 years, maybe 5 years.
Has it really been that long?
It was before like we had the Global Game Jam in 2020. Because that happened in January, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't participate in that one. I was just helping volunteer. Mm-hmm. So it has been at least 4 years since I've done it.
Hmm.
And it was fun. It was like the most chill game jam I've ever done.
Love it.
When we did it at ours, Ellen, it was relatively chill, but like we got a lot of stuff done. So like, and I was, I don't know, it felt like we got a lot of stuff done. But this one, like we had very low ambition plans.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which was great. And like the game we made is fun and silly, but like breaks after a while. You know, it's fine.
Yeah.
So the game we made is called Apocalypse Duck. Play as a rubber duck with laser vision.
And you convert,
and you convert random objects into other rubber ducks, and then you use those rubber ducks to make more objects into more rubber ducks. It's hilarious.
I love it.
A little squeak sound every time.
Oh my God. One.
When you play through it, it's like halfway through, you're like, oh man, this is Katamari.
Yeah.
And instead of being like, oh, they just took Katamari, you go, I'm so excited.
Yeah. We didn't plan for the amount of ducks you have. Apparently, the game breaks when you get over 200 ducks.
That's not enough ducks.
It's not enough ducks.
We need to change this.
Yeah, no.
More ducks.
Probably needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it, though. So
what I like about the best game jam games are ones that like have... that aren't always the ones that are like the most satisfying to play.
Yeah.
They're the ones that like demonstrate a concept and then you're like, I could see 100 levels of this.
Yeah.
And that's what Apocalypse Duck was to me. It's like, I could, with these simple mechanics of just like marshaling your army of laser-eyed ducks.
Yeah.
And a growing army as you yourself also grow.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like through whatever bizarre, like, living rooms environments.
Right, right,
you know, down at the docks or any kind of thing. Like, I could see that going on forever.
Yes.
Never getting boring.
Yeah, yeah. It's a silly game. It was very fun to make.
This sounds like a new obsession. Like, this is dangerous.
That's why we got to leave it. Because if I start again, then I got another vengeance. Uh-huh. I don't want to work on Apocalypse.
Or another widget special.
Oh, that was an intense period, too.
Okay, yes, yes. I was, just before we move on, this is not going to go anywhere, but I'm curious if you could do a Laser Loon mod.
Oh, Laser Loon.
So instead of ducks, it's the Laser Loon that almost became our state flag.
Yeah, the people demand it.
They demand a oh, right. I remember what, I remember that mm-hmm. thing. We could look into that.
Okay, all right.
We're going to need some funding, though, so we'll cough up the cash.
Right. Yeah. The Society of the Laser Loon. I'm sure it's probably like stirring out there right now. The Laser Loon will not be forgotten.
No.
So. We might go to them for some initial funding.
Sweet, sweet, sweet. Outside all those things, I'm sure I did other stuff, but I don't remember because 2 weeks ago happened, and I don't remember what happened after that. I watched movies, but I don't remember which movies I watched. Played some games. Yep. Did stuff.
I gave you a plant.
Yes, I have more plants.
You're welcome.
Mark, save me.
It's my turn, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I did a lot over break, trying to keep track of it all.
God, so much.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know how much it is, if it's like volume or just enumerated. You know what I mean? Like, is it a lot of things or is it a lot of stuff?
I mean, I think in general, Mark, you're better at keep holding information than I am. So, like, you remember a lot of the stuff that you did the past few months.
Maybe that's all it is. Maybe you did just as much or more.
I might have, yeah.
There's so much on this list. So you definitely hit volume, but some of these things are like also big things, but they're also not necessarily big things that you had crammed into a small. You started some big things, I think is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And let's end with the suspense and get into it.
Yeah.
So the local IDGA chapter that I'm a board member of, we have finally put in place our elections process.
Yeah.
So this is of academic interest to listeners, but if you have an IDGA chapter in your area, it might be helpful to know how we manage some of this stuff. But essentially, an IDGA chapter is just a bunch of people who hang out and get to use the IDGA name for whatever city they're in. Like, that's kind of all it really has ever been for most of the chapters.
Mm-hmm.
Most chapters don't know this about the other chapters. And so that was a long time of like everyone feeling kind of like, well, we're not really a real thing. And so our chapter has been trying to sort of professionalize our operation in a sense.
Yeah.
And so a lot of what I'm going to talk about is related to that and another thing I'll get to. But the first thing is that years ago, like literally years ago, I wrote out an elections process for the board, for our volunteer board. Now, because our chapter doesn't have membership, nobody signs up to be a member, nobody pays dues. It's not that kind of group. The process by which we are required to elect a board is like, how do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we are open to the public and, you know, we have community membership in the sense that people who show up are members, but we don't have voter registration, essentially.
Yeah.
So we need to come up with a system that was not burdensome on that audience because we want high participation,
mm-hmm.
but was also a legitimate process.
Yeah.
So that people could throw their names in their hat in the ring and feel like they weren't just the ones who like had the energy to do it. Which is what a lot of times these things happen is like, oh, I'll help out, and then you become in charge.
Yeah.
Which is that was my path, right? Mm-hmm. Like a lot of the current board, that's how we sort of became the community leaders. Is like we were the ones willing to do it.
Right. Yeah.
And that's a great process.
Mm-hmm.
But we now have enough on responsibility and enough organization. Like the organization is big enough now that it needs something more than that.
Yeah.
And so that's what this process was designed to. I wrote this years ago and then the pandemic hit.
Mm.
And like, frankly, it was kind of an excuse to put off a lot of stuff, frankly, for the organization. We kept alive. I'm very proud of us. But it's now been a year since we've been holding in-person events. And now it's time to like put this thing into action.
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to have 2-year terms and we're supposed to be reelected by some process.
Mm-hmm.
That has begun now.
Yeah.
And it's going pretty well. We got some new nominees. We have 3 open seats and 5 candidates. So it's competitive.
Yeah.
Which is exciting because what's great is we've also cultivated an environment of volunteerism in this period, which means
high five.
If you don't get on that board, you can still do as much as you want to do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like we've walked the line pretty well.
Yeah.
Of like, if you want to join the duocracy and you've got some energy, you get to do some stuff. There's no mechanism that denies that from you.
I was so confused for a second. Like
But at the same time, we have an elected board, and those are the people who are responsible for the organization.
Yeah.
And so it's a burden on those people rather than a power granted to them.
Right.
It's still a power granted to them in some sense, but because we've really empowered a lot of our volunteers in a lot of ways, I'm very proud of that process. We did a nomination process. Nominees were set. We opened the ballot. In March, when our next game dev meeting happens, that's when we'll tally the votes,
mm-hmm.
And we'll see what the new board is.
Yeah.
I'm not up for election. I will be up for an election next year.
Okay.
So you know, vote for me then, I guess.
Campaign starts.
The other thing we did for IDGA that I put together is we now sell merch. So just like we do for Nice Games Club with our Nice Games Club t-shirt, nicegames.club/shirt,
mm-hmm.
You can go to merch.igdatc.org and you can get we have a lot of options for different shirts and logos.
Yeah, there were a ton of different colors.
Yeah, and so with the Nice Games Club shirt, we just have one, and that's the idea is that there's just one.
Yeah.
But for IDGATC, I wanted to have like a sort of to represent like the sort of wild diversity of our community, like the people who like weird colors, like just this. I wanted to have lots of different options while still all feeling quite nice together. So there's different versions of the logo,
mm-hmm.
different shirts you can choose from. There's a one color version, so I could have like colors that are without offending my aesthetic sensibilities.
right,
because that still matters to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy with that. But the reason I'm going on about it because what happened was we don't have any mechanisms to raise money as a group. It's like that's been a big problem for the organization is we're not a legal entity of any kind. We're just we just have that name from the parent org. We don't have any, and dealing with them has always been trouble.
Yeah.
Trying to get money from them. And so we put up this thing and we've already made enough money to pay for the holiday party next year.
Wow.
Woohoo!
So
high five.
Yeah. So, but it's like, why didn't we do this years ago?
Yeah.
It's an on-demand thing. It just took some energy from me. It didn't, and it wasn't even my idea. Somebody suggested it to me. Like, why don't you guys sell t-shirts? And I'm like, why don't we?
Wait, where do you go/merch?
Merch.igdatc.org. And it's the same process by which we do the Nice Gamesly t-shirt. It's Amazon, so it's the nice quality stuff.
Yeah.
Tank tops.
Ooh. A lot of options. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, this is of interest to folks who are in the community. If you're listening, you're not from the Twin Cities, not as valuable to you. But yeah. But the process, I think, is important.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's a way for us to raise some money. It's not an efficient fundraising tool because we make less than 50% of every sale. Damn. But it's much easier to convince someone to buy a shirt than it is to donate $20.
Yeah.
So it's like, so anyway, we'll get some pizza and a couple of events going forward, which is like, that's been a struggle. We've had no budget. Like, we all have means and stuff, but it's logistics is kind of difficult. Like, controls them? It's crazy.
Yeah.
So I'm really happy about that. It was a simple, simple thing. Ellen.
Okay. So many t-shirts. Okay. There's the black t-shirt with the white decal. There's a gray t-shirt with the color decal. Ooh. There's blue. There's that nice blue. There are different cuts. Like, for, you know, different types of gendered clothing. There's like different V-necks and crew necks. There's the long sleeve shirt, which is the best kind of long sleeve shirt where the sleeves are a different color than the middle.
It's called a raglan?
It is called a raglan.
Okay.
Easy to find.
Wouldn't have known that.
Easy to find. And there's a tote bag.
Yeah, I'm excited about the tote bag.
I am going to order that right now along with Project L, the board game.
Because you're on Amazon.
Because I'm on Amazon.
As long as you're at the store.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, beautiful.
So more IGDA stuff. We hosted the Global Game Jam.
Yeah.
And as an organization, we did it. But also, I personally did. We did it here at Noble Robot.
Yes.
We were able to, the unit next door to Noble Robot is empty. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to, my building management, who I usually do not have a good relationship with, and I've talked to other people in the building, they don't either.
Oh,
okay.
I don't care who knows it. But I just said, like, hey, I run this workshop thing. I tried to describe it in the most generic terms possible. I didn't have to explain what we were actually doing.
Yeah.
I said, like, can we, you know, we'll put up some folding tables and use it for the weekend. Is that something we can do? And like, within 3 minutes, they're like, yeah, sure, no problem.
Wow.
Just vacuum when you're done. And I'm like, oh, okay. And that baffled me to no end. Like, normally it's pulling teeth just to get anything out of these folks.
Yeah.
So I owe them my thanks for being so free, which is like, yeah, you don't need to rent it for the weekend. You can just use it. That was very kind of them. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we did. We were able to have a 60 people capacity, and we had almost that many coming in and out, and there was enough room. And we got a bunch of people, including you, Steven, brought in extra folding chairs and tables.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Which really saved me from having to like go out and buy things that I would maybe have to return. Or so I was. It didn't cost me really any money.
That's good.
Which was great. And Scott and Andy bought and brought in some snacks.
Yeah, that's really sweet.
So it cost them some money. So it was like a big thing to do, to put on. But man, people stepped up to help.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think, I mean, other than you said you had a pretty calming experience, I think it was probably due to your team and the project.
Yeah.
But I think I'd like to think a little bit of this due that we organized a pretty good event.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure.
I'm really, really pleased. You know, fingers crossed that space is still unrented next year. But because we've had difficult time finding venues for things in the past year or so. And so having Noble Robot as the thing we can do, but it's not a big space. Right. So there's only so many types of things we can host here.
Yeah.
But we got to do Global Game Jam, and we did it last year as well, but we had space here, and so it was a smaller event.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was a bigger deal this year, and yeah, we had 14 games from 60 people.
That's awesome.
A bunch of people were online as well this year. It was the hybrid process. Worked out really well.
It was pretty smooth, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. People got to have teammates that were not here.
Yep, that's how we did it. We had our 3D artist online.
That was... I think we're a model site. I'm very proud of us.
Yay!
And, man, all the games were so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the prompt for Global Game Jam this year was, make me laugh.
I did not like the
prompt. And I was like, that's the dumbest prompt. It's just going to be tons of Rick and Morty jokes.
Yeah.
And that's not even people's fault, right? Because, like, being cleverly funny is a skill you can't expect from people.
Especially in the video.
Right? But it's easy to make people laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, so I was kind of, so I had a low expectation of what to come, but of the process, less of the people doing it. I didn't have low opinion of people's ability to make jokes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I just think that you're going to just go for cheap, easy meme things because that's funny and why not? You'll enjoy yourself. And I was like way wrong. I was so wrong.
Yeah.
Every single team came up with a really unique, clever approach to it. No two were the same in terms of how they tackled the prompt.
That's true.
And they were all legitimately funny. Mm. Like, it wasn't just all like cackling at each other, at our friends' jokes to be nice. Like, really clever, funny stuff. And I was so impressed. Really, really pleased with all the teams this year.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Okay, so last night from where we're sitting.
Yeah.
Was it last night?
No, it was two nights ago.
Two nights ago.
We're talking about places.
Wednesday.
Correct. We did Twin Cities Playtest here, which we do every month.
Yeah.
And we played a lot of the Global Game Jam games.
Woohoo!
Sort of closing the book on Global Game Jam this year is the playtest right after.
Yeah.
But we got interviewed by for the local paper.
Yeah.
So we'll see what comes of that.
Which local paper can we talk about?
The Minneapolis Star Tribune.
No
my,
way!
My local paper.
Your local paper.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really nice. The reporter just contacted us and said, like, hey, I'm interested. We'll see something, you know, come an angle on this and interview and been interviewed a bunch of people. So, you know, it might be a big story, might be a little story, but like it's for this is in the IGD ATC section because I think it's important to the organization to get a little bit of public exposure and not expecting anything. But the reporter was a really nice guy. And actually, I kind of just hope to see him at other events because he seemed to have a good time.
It was cool.
And we all liked him.
So, cool.
It was pretty neat. All right. So related to that,
yes,
I'm only through like one of my like seven categories. I'm sorry, folks.
This is because we said we warned everybody.
We just cracked an hour. Sorry.
High volume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a process for IGGATC, which is a lot of us have been very frustrated. And I mentioned it briefly that we're not a legal entity.
Right.
We can't raise money. We can't hire staff. We could technically do all that stuff, but we'd all individually be on the hook for it. The tax implications are not super clear.
Yeah.
Now, the relationship we're supposed to have with the parent org, the International Game Developers Association, is supposed to be that people can donate to them and tag it as a Twin Cities donation. And then that goes into an account, like all 100% of that goes into an account that we can have access to. Mm-hmm. That has never worked.
Yeah.
It's a bureaucratic challenge rather than an intentional one. Mm-hmm. The folks at the parent org are all lovely and well-intentioned, but they are also people under a lot of stress to run a big thing.
Yeah.
With that in mind, we've been extremely unsatisfied with our relationship on that level.
Hmm.
As we've gotten a bigger organization, have bigger ambitions, that has become a huge challenge. And it's the sort of on the line of it, like because we also have as an IGGA chapter, there are things we are not allowed to do in order to maintain that relationship. And that has been restrictive in a way that is also not intentional.
Yeah.
And so we can't pay for things because the only way we're supposed to get money as an organization is through this process that doesn't work.
Right.
And so I would say we are between 5 and 7 years behind our ambitions. Like it's that bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a sort of an open secret. We've talked about it within the group and amongst the board, the volunteer board, and we have now taken our concerns directly to the IDGA leadership, who've been very receptive. But we've made it very clear to them that, like, we are going to move ahead with our own solutions to these problems, and if that violates some rules, then we can have that conversation. But we're no longer going to let that stop us. And they were receptive to that, which was to their credit. And they're going to try to see if they can help fix some of those problems. I think they a little bit more of a fire under their ass. But
yeah,
we told them very frankly, we're not waiting around anymore.
Yeah.
So what that means is we are forming a nonprofit corporation and we're applying for 501c3 status, which is the a charitable nonprofit. We're calling it Nice Games Alliance. It's not related to Nice Games Club, but it's a fun name that I came with a million years ago and everybody likes it. So we're going to deal with that.
Yeah.
But it's just the name. It's just the name of the legal entity.
Right,
it's not a brand that we're going to be using. And the idea is we're going to have a bank account. We're going to have legal status. Our board. It's not going to be the same organization, right?
Right.
The IDGA chapter is still going to be a volunteer-run, community-elected, like advisory council to this nonprofit we're starting, which will then fund a lot of the activities that the chapter goes. That's a little wonky, and it might be such in the future that we need to keep those organizations a little bit farther apart. It might be that one eats the other. It might be that they combine. Like Legos, and it works perfectly.
Yeah.
But we started this process with the goal of being able to just do more of what we wanted to do, and with the aim that our chapter is much more of aligned with what we'd call it like a charitable organization. We are open to the public.
Mm-hmm.
We provide educational information and programs.
Mm-hmm.
We assist folks looking to get into the industry. We are not too for the benefit of our members or our industry.
Yeah.
Right. Which is what a 501c6 is, and that's what the International Game Developers Association is, and they're actually quite good at that. Like that is their aim. They advocate for favorable legislation for tax benefits for game companies.
Right, yeah.
We don't have the industry here, so as a local chapter, our interests have never aligned on that dimension.
Yep, yeah. That makes sense.
It's aligned in other ways, mm-hmm. and like I said, being a chapter of the IDGA is something that I think is still an important thing that we're proud of. But again, there's two sides to it. And one of it is that the things we actually do day to day, the community we organize, does not work the same way. And so that's why we're forming our own thing for this. And so we have ambitions.
Yeah.
We've been having meetings every couple of months, the folks who've been interested in this particular dimension. Steven, you've been part of those meetings.
I have.
We call it the Party Planning Committee.
Yeah.
Because we're interested in putting on a conference at some point, and that's a good test of our like fundraising abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And so all this is to be announced and discussed in further details. But the wheels on that are moving. We have pro bono lawyers helping us out. Some students, actually.
That's amazing.
Some law students.
Yay!
Have taken our case to help us incorporate, which is great and really aligns with sort of our like founding mission of like, let's, you know. So it's very cool. It's cool. And also we get to save on legal fees. So everybody wins.
That's very nice.
Yeah. So I've got to write a check for a filing fee later today.
All right.
I think to get the tax exempt status with the IRS going.
Should we like get some champagne out or something or?
No. We'll save that for later.
Diet Coke maybe.
Yeah, probably. but yeah, it's moving. And I wanted to talk about it a little on the show, even though I don't have a lot of details to share.
Sure.
Because it's like that thinking has consumed a lot of my winter break.
Right.
Is that process. Mm-hmm. And like I have a little for-profit company that I run, and like the show's finances roll through that, for mm-hmm. example. And you know, I operate this co-working space. And so, but at the same time, this is a separate thing. This is a nonprofit corporation. I will be on the board of the directors of that, but I will have no ownership in it because that's not how those things work.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like in the future for there to be a staff. I would love for it to have corporate sponsors. I want it to go places, but in order for it to go anywhere, it's got to start.
Right.
And so we're there. That's the point we're at now.
Hey, yeah.
That's pretty exciting.
Removing obstacles by creating new pathways.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, you know, it might, people have a lot of different initiatives and energies. And if we could put that under one roof, at least as a sponsoring organization, right? Like I said, Nice Games Alliance is the name on the document. It's not the brand.
Right.
I would like to think that will inspire more people to step up with what they want to do in this community because there'll be infrastructure for them to provide it.
Yeah.
And if that's all this ever is, if our ambitions don't grow that far past what we already do as a community, still a success.
Mm. Yeah, it's great.
Other than I have to do another company's taxes every year, but well, whatever.
You gotta find a student accountant.
Yeah, such is the burden of reluctant entrepreneurialism.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that. You'll hear more about that from me, but it's not that it isn't related to what we do on the show. So it'll be just a thing I'm doing, and I'll check in from time to time about. Okay, that still not done with my big list, folks.
Yeah, you're about halfway through.
I know. I got hired on a new part-time gig. I'm going to be porting a really interesting, really interesting project.
Ooh. So excited.
I'm going to do some porting work.
Y'all should hear the way that Mark talks about this project. You are so excited. I love hearing about it.
Basically giggling.
Yeah. That is describe it. I can't talk. It's an unannounced thing, so I can't. The thing I'm porting is unannounced, so I can't talk about it yet. But I will as soon as I'm able, but it's not my choice to make. So, I'm thrilled about it, and what's nice is that Dream Settler that I've been working on, I'm still working on, and like Steven, you said you have the Suture Club hasn't put out a thing since you've hired.
Yeah.
Like I thought we'd have Dream Settler out by now, so I'm starting to get itchy about like, you know. Luckily, I've had a bunch of other side projects that have like kept me satisfied every year. Like I put something out every year.
Wait, you're telling me a couple game development projects went over the schedule?
I know, right? But because Dream Settler is a part-time project, I cannot take a full-time job.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, not without completely going insane.
Right.
Which is an option, but...
it's not.
It's on the table.
Right. It always is.
Oh, my gosh.
But this is another part-time job. So I'm still not a very highly paid game developer, even if you add both of those gigs up.
Yeah.
But it puts me in a better place where I was like, oh, I was going to have to hustle for a couple more freelance gigs, smaller things.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing stuff on LinkedIn. I'm like, oh, I really would want to get that job.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that pays really well. But like, I cannot accept a full-time job now. Okay. So
you'll get there.
But what's nice is that hopefully both of these projects will wrap up around the same time.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's not going to be what happens. But right now, that's kind of what it sort of seems like.
Sure.
And like Dream Settler and all the excitement I had about that I have talked about on the show, very similar feelings about this kind of thing. It's very my vibe. I'm excited to be supporting the vision of the artist who created it. Mm-hmm. Which is always a fun place for me to be in, sort of a contributing non-initiator. I don't get a lot of that often because I'm so reluctantly entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
And so it's really fun to be in that position to support the work of this other thing. And I get to use a lot of my technical work that I learned going all the way back to Widget Satchel. You know, the porting work is something I can offer now. And so that being a venue into getting close to this really fascinating project is really exciting. So you'll hear more about that soon enough.
Yeah.
Two thoughts.
Yes.
I'm interrupting your flow, and I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I was done with that part.
Yep. There are three more bullet points. Sorry. There are like 12 more bullet points, but there are three more main bullet points to follow. And I want to just say that for someone who says they are reluctantly entrepreneurial, this is a very long list. Also, when those two projects like close out,
yeah,
then champagne?
Then long nap, I think.
Oh, okay. All right.
And you know, the thing is, when both of those projects are up, I'm actually really curious what my feelings will be on about like applying for a full-time job.
Yeah.
Because I definitely feel more hireable than I was after we finished Widget Satchel.
Right, yeah.
Just because when you are indie, you like the network effects are very low.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. But I've now worked on enough projects and enough people know who I am within the industry. Like, I think I could actually, these days I could get a job, which is like a weird feeling. It was a long time coming since I switched careers to like feel like I was actually
it's a hard career,
a worker in this industry. Only recently have I really felt that.
Yeah.
But I'm just literally unable to make that move yet, and I don't know that I'll want to.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be bad to draw a paycheck one of these days.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
For sure.
Yep. I understand that.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So. The rest of my list, well, some of my list is businessy stuff, but most of it's fun stuff or personal stuff. Mm-hmm. But I did a couple little hobby things over the break because of my reluctant entrepreneurialism, and I turn everything into like commercialize or professionalize everything I do. Mm. It was really fun to just do things for fun. And two of them is that I did this program called the Bricklink Designer Program. Mm.
Yeah.
Bricklink is a company that's owned by Lego.
Okay.
And they started out as like a clearinghouse if you wanted to buy and sell pieces.
Yeah.
So it's a great website where you can like put together all of the pieces from the history of Lego, and then you could buy them from third-party people. It's kind of like a really organized eBay for one thing.
Yeah.
So you can also like design your project and then get a parts list. So it's just for people who are like into Lego, it's like a cool little thing. And so it became the de facto way to sort of like buy and sell used Lego, and you could also get some order new things. Anyway, this is a preamble, but Lego bought the company.
Okay.
And so and I'm just learning a little bit about this because I haven't actually touched Lego in like 20 years.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, it was totally my jam. Mm-hmm. And then I just got older and fell away from it. And I never became an adult fan of Lego, as they're described.
Yeah.
But I don't know how I got connected with this, but Bricklink makes a piece of software called Studio or stud.io. Get it? Studs. Very cute. And basically, it's just a digital Lego builder. Right?
Okay.
So, and it's a really good piece of software.
Yeah. Cool.
So I started playing with it. What they do is you can also like build your thing and then click a buy button. It's like so integrated into the little ecosystem, which is very cute. And but they have this program with the Bricklink Designer Program where they do it four times a year, and they just started it last year. And you submit your designs, well, your like Lego, your little Lego creation. And then a bunch of people vote on it. And then the votes don't matter. That's just a guidance, and they're not public.
Okay.
But then the committee then picks like five of them every quarter to make limited edition sets.
Ooh.
So people have probably heard of Lego Ideas,
yeah,
which is this similar program, but it's much more involved.
Sure.
It's like a Kickstarter for independent Lego projects. And then Lego will take the winners or winner, like it's sometimes three a year or whatever.
Wow.
And then they will embark on a multi-year process of turning into a real Lego product that gets sold all over the place, right?
Wow.
And very often what ends up coming out of that process, it's part of the Ideas like category of Lego products.
Mm-hmm.
They bear very little resemblance to the original submission.
Yeah.
So it's a whole thing. And that is the way for fans of Lego, which is a untapped talent pool, to contribute. And that's been a win-win for the company and for people engaging with it and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
This is sort of similar, but it's a much more scaled and like literal process.
Yeah.
Like it's a limited edition run. It's an official Lego product, but it doesn't get a part, like a set number. So it's like it's the Bricklink sort of spin-off. It's got the Lego logo, but like, and there's only like 30,000 copies ever made, and then they just don't make them anymore. It's like it's the scope is so much lower, and like, and you also don't need to like do a public campaign for your project if you want to be involved.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, the deadline's in 2 weeks. I'll make something and submit it, and then I'll be done.
Yeah,
and it was really really fun to do. So I made a building that was really fascinating, and I can share links to it in the show notes.
Please do, in detail,
but it was really fun to do. And then just going through the process and knowing that it's not like, I could just be like, not worried about what happens.
Yeah.
So the voting on it is closed, and they're going to take a month to decide. And if I were to guess, I would say of the 200 odd entries, which isn't that many, frankly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they pick five from that. I would say mine is probably 150. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's good, but there was a lot of really good stuff.
Cool. Yeah.
And so I have no designs on or no hope of being selected.
Yeah.
But it was just fun to do.
Yeah.
And because it had a deadline, that was important to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's got to be done by this. It's a submission, which is that's a language I'm familiar with when it comes to this kind of thing.
Yeah.
But because I knew going in, I have not touched Legos in 20 years. I feel like I had got some aptitude, and so I felt like I naturally took to it. Mm-hmm. But there's lots of things that you know from being into that scene, and I don't want to join that scene.
Sure, yeah.
It was really, really fun.
Cool.
So for people who are like me, who are overwhelmed, this is why I'm mentioning it, who are overwhelmed with all the stuff you obligate yourself to, which I do throughout the year, this took extra time, but it was very relaxing, and it was a thing I needed.
Yeah.
Which is really, really fun.
Yeah.
Other fun thing I did over the break is I finally got delivered this giant book that I ordered a year ago called Shift Happens, which is a history of typewriters and keyboards.
That's right.
And it comes in a slipcase. It's three volumes because there's a bonus.
Oh my.
Plus an extra pamphlet that came along with it because it's a Kickstarter project. So of course there's bonuses.
Okay.
The whole thing is about 1,300 pages.
Oh my god!
And it weighs 12 pounds.
Oh my god!
I'm exaggerating. It weighs a lot. It weighs a lot.
But
though.
Still, yeah.
And so that's why it's two volumes.
Yeah,
it'd be too heavy.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So I got through. I'm reading 200 pages a night of this thing.
Oh wow!
It's so amazing. And I have to prop up a bunch of pillows on my lap just so I can
read it. It's so big.
Big
yeah.
Old book. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hilarious. But I'll put a link for that in the show notes because it is just and tons of history. Just the most fascinating stuff. I've already taken too long on this episode, but just the things you learn about stuff you understand, and as a video game developer, as a software designer, it the history of all the things, why is the @ above the two? You know, where did the control button come from?
Oh yeah.
Why are there two shifts?
Yeah.
Right. All these questions. All this stuff. Why are things where they are? Why did return become enter? But not on certain Apple keyboards.
Yeah.
All of these things, that's fascinating to know, and then it contextualizes the history. And then you think about what you do day in and day out as you work with computers and how you operate. And one of the most fascinating parts, I will tell this bit, is when you have a command line software, the terminal, right? It's named the terminal because in the old days, it used to be that you'd have a physical terminal where you would enter the commands, would go to a computer in another place that you'd have timeshare access to.
Yeah.
And then it would come back to you printed out on your terminal.
Yeah,
that is the metaphor for that. And what's fascinating about it is that if you talk to someone who got into software development, they're a Linux person, for example, not to stereotype, but a Linux person.
Sure.
In the past 20 odd years, they will talk about the sort of the purity of the command line and how a GUI slows you down and all these sorts of things. And they talk about the reasons that is better to work on this sort of thing. And they're not illegitimate reasons exactly, but that is not the reason it is that way.
Hmm.
The reason the command line exists is because they didn't have any other way to do it.
Yeah.
And as soon as they came with other ways to do it, they started doing it the other ways.
Right. Yeah.
And so it is really interesting when you hear people talk about certain things are this way and that, and it's been proven. And the QWERTY keyboard, for example, the path of the letters. There's a lot of people talk about how it's really inefficient, or there's theories onto why it was put this way. But it was kind of the first keyboard had a very similar arrangement and never changed.
Hmm.
And despite the fact that it was a highly competitive industry with a bunch of different types of keyboards, so there actually is something to it. It's a good layout, but it's not the best layout.
Sure.
But what is the best layout is not something science has tackled.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because there are different things on what could be best. Like Dvorak, you move your fingers a lot less.
Yeah.
But there's essentially no evidence that it, other than specific repetitive stress related to that particular thing, it's not faster. It's not more efficient. It's not, people don't learn it any faster or slower.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of myths about a lot of these things. And that was the most interesting to read about because I feel like I know a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But seeing all of it contextualized and hearing little biographies of all the people involved in these decisions. And then what's great about the book too is it's not just this is some nerdy stuff about keyboards. It starts talking about the political movements of the day.
Oh.
It has a very strong interest in feminist movements. That weaves throughout the narrative, which I really appreciate because usually you don't get a lot of that in historical texts. And even though there's a wealth of information to tie that stuff together. And it's a great human history of how we turn like input into data and like how we interact with the things we do and how like just, I don't know, it's one of those like the invention of the wheel, basically. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, typing has been like, it could have easily not happened.
Right.
Yeah. And it would be a completely different world. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing to see that. Anyway, I'm like going on about it because I had a really good time reading it. And I just got through the first half. I just started the second volume.
Okay.
I'm on page 640 or something.
Yeah.
The chapter titles in this book are amazing. So if Mark's overview hasn't sold you on the how cool this book is, some of these chapter titles will absolutely. So here's one that says chapter 6 of volume 1 is The Primitive Torture Board.
Oh,
yeah.
Chapter 9 is The Largest Pinball Machine in the World.
Okay.
Chapter 11, Do Not Fold, Spindle, or Mutilate. The Kangaroo Paw. Mm-hmm. God's Own Keyboard.
What?
Perfect for Shrek.
What?
And Like Fondling a Zombie.
Oh my goodness.
That describes the Spectrum ZX.
Oh. Okay.
Which was
and other Sinclair computers.
Right. That's really interesting.
I don't know what any of those words mean, Stephen. It's all over my head.
It's wild.
All over my head, like God's Own Keyboard.
I can't believe I've gone on this long and then you're prompting me to talk more.
I'm sorry. I really should.
This is your fault. Listeners,
excuse me. No. I have cut. No. Uh-huh. It is not all my fault. You wrote all these bullet points in this script.
I didn't write the ones you just read off to me.
That's true, though. Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll share the blame, Mark.
Okay. And so the last thing I'll talk about is a game I made 10 years ago.
Yeah.
10 plus years ago, damn it. a mobile game I made in Flash called Operators. I'm remaking that and I'm putting it back out on the Google Play Store because I got a letter last month. Well, let's say a letter, but that's what it felt like.
Yeah.
But an email from the Google Play developer portal saying, like, we might shut down your account if you don't use it and update all the things that are out of compliance, which is like, I need to agree to all the terms of service changes in the last 5 odd years since I've like touched that portal.
Yeah. Mm.
And one of them was like, we are now, if you don't publish something in the next 60 days, like, we're just going to disable your developer account. I'm like, well, I guess I don't mind that much. I'm not a mobile developer anymore.
Yeah, close.
But I would like to keep that going. So I dug out this whole project, and I updated all the libraries. Adobe Air, Flash, still being updated. It's not by Adobe anymore. It's been moved over to other companies because there's a huge audience, especially corporate customers who maintain old software.
Yeah.
But also, you can still support the latest Android and iOS features in Flash and publish it because these companies are now adding. So every time those API changes, Flash gets updated too. It's still alive for some reason.
So I didn't
have to
die.
So I didn't have to port this project. I just took the code and I just needed to relay out it because screens are 5 times bigger now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm doing that. And so when that's done, I will share that with folks because Steven, you played it.
I'm very excited.
Yeah.
This game's very fun. it's just a bunch of like you just solve math problems really quick. And I just like those.
Cool.
I like doing that.
So. All right.
Yeah, it's a rapid fire game where you solve simple math equations, but instead of numbers, you get abstracted symbols that you're meant to interpret. So from a bunch of different sets. And because it was originally designed as a tablet game, you put it down on the table in front of you. This was before like networking on mobile was like a thing you could just do really easily. There's a two-player version, and then the symbols they're all rotationally symmetrical. So
nice. That's cool.
So you're answering the same problem but looking at the same thing. And because it's a math problem, they're actually in the wrong order. So the answer for each player is different.
Oh.
But the problem in front of you is exactly the same.
Yeah.
So that's really fun. Huh. And I added a couple more simple sets because that was an easy process as I was going through this. And you can mix and match them. So it's just quick recognition and it's very satisfying to do. It's very much a ride on the bus kind of game.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm kind of excited to get back out there.
I'm excited to see it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have the time for this, but like, I got that letter from.
You don't have a full time job.
I know, right?
But you got to do something about it because you got that letter from Google.
Yeah,
you got a nasty grant like from Google.
I just imagine Google like you know coming in to trick you to be like you've been served. That's what I'm hearing.
So this every
time. That's kind of what it felt like.
I know. I get it though. I totally get it.
So no, the best way to get Mark to develop a game is to give him a nasty letter.
Honestly, like, just hint something at me, and then I'll, like, think about it for 20 minutes, and I'll have a whole plan. That's the best way to trick me into, like, wasting weeks on something. It's just let me think it was my idea. All right, that's our show. For show notes and links on today's topics, go to our website, nacegames.club. This is on social media, Threads mostly these days, at Nice Games Club, where Dale posts about game dev resources and questions about Yarn Spinner. Reply, if you like, or email us, contact@nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And you want to keep things more casual, just stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello. Next week, we'll be doing a Nice Games Jam. But that's it for this week. So, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.